This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
The Dr. Courtney Show is brought to you by Novavax Vaccines. Essential protection for essential bonds.
Hi, welcome to the Dr. Courtney Show. I'm Dr. Courtney Campbell.
People call me Dr. Courtney. Everybody who's joining us again, welcome. And if you're joining us for the very first time, I just want to say welcome. This is a podcast that's just dedicated to celebrating all the amazing people doing incredible things on behalf of pets everywhere. This could be veterinarians, scientists, people in the pet boarding or grooming industries, or just pet lovers in general. We get a chance to just talk about true medical conditions. We get a chance to just talk about how to keep our pets healthy. And so I'm just super pumped. I'm super just excited about this topic today because, you know, I've dedicated my life to veterinary surgery, but I get a question about this condition all the time from my friends, my family members, and I think veterinarians everywhere have people talking to them about this particular condition. And the reason why I'm so excited about it is because we've got a stellar guest joining us that we're going to talk to in a few moments about this. And so this is going to be great. If there's somebody you want to talk to, this is the person. So this is going to be great. Everybody knows that when you're joining this podcast, one thing I love to do is I call it set the scene. And we're going to set the scene because this is when I was practicing in Los Angeles. We know that Los Angelinos or Angelinos, they love to do one thing and they're very good. This is one of their favorite hobbies, and that's to go on vacation. Okay. They're really good at going on vacation. And when I was practicing in Los Angeles, I saw a lot of dogs with their parents who went on vacation a lot. And they were so good about not making sure that their pets were bored or anxious, and that they would get them involved in daycare settings or boarding grooming facilities, boarding facilities that they were able to interact and be social. And so a very common question and a very common source of consternation and sometimes a spirited debate was that they would come back from vacation and their dog would be coughing. They'd pick up their dog from the boarding facility and on Monday they'd hear a little cough. But they're working. They're just getting back into the swing of things. And so on Tuesday, they also hear a little bit of a cough. And on Wednesday, it gets even more severe. And by Thursday, the cough from their dog is actually keeping them up at night. It's actually preventing them from sleeping. So that's when they bring them into the veterinarian. So the question becomes, in those situations, and this is a question that runs through so many people's minds on a daily basis and veterinarians on a daily basis. And like I said, this is a topic of great discussion. And that is, did that dog get the cough from the daycare or did he bring it to the daycare when he arrived? Another question is, why did you wait until the cough was keeping you up at night for you to bring him in? No, I'm kidding. But that's the idea here, is that this human-animal bond, this is canine cough, canine infectious cough, because there's many causes of cough. But this topic is so important to me and so important to so many pet parents because it truly is illustrative of that human-animal bond, that intersectionality between us being social, dogs being social, when we actually notice the condition in dogs. As I mentioned in this particular example, when I was down in Los Angeles, it was actually when the dog was keeping them up at night was when they actually brought the dog in. So that's actually something important to talk about too, is the fact that we tend to notice and address medical conditions in dogs when they start affecting us. So listen, you know, I am not going to keep you in suspense anymore. We are joined today by an outstanding guest. I mean, this guest is, you know, everybody's seen the movie Outbreak, right? I mean, you know, this is serious business. He stands as our first line of defense between us being safe and infectious disease spreading everywhere to the pet population. He's literally, you know, been on the forefront of public health in New Hampshire. He's been at The Ohio State University serving as their epidemiologist there. He has a PhD. He's got master's in preventative veterinary medicine. Basically, this guy's kind of a big deal, okay? His name is Dr. Stahl.
And we'll be back right after these messages.
Sit. Stay. We'll be right back after a short pause. Well, four to be exact.
Hi, I'm Victoria Sunral, and I'm the Community Education Coordinator at Texas Litter Control, whose mission is to educate the public on the importance of spaying and neutering companion animals and to provide low-cost sterilization options. You can support Texas Litter Control by donating your non-cash items like cars, stocks, and real estate. Please visit texaslittercontrol.org to learn more.
Welcome back. Dr. Stahl, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Oh, it's truly my pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
No problem. I mean, this is something that, as I mentioned, as veterinarians and pet parents everywhere, they think about infectious canine cough. And before we jump into it, I would love to know, because a lot of people are thinking, all right, I think I've heard of the word epidemiologist, but I'm so curious. Set the scene for us. For Dr. Stahl, how did you develop a passion for pets, and then how did that bleed into epidemiology?
Well, that's a great question. Well, first of all, when you're introducing me, I was wondering who this amazing person was. I don't know who that is.
So humble.
I grew up in a veterinary family. My dad's a veterinarian. We had a small practice in New Jersey, and I grew up, you know, our house was right next to the practice, so I was there. You know, I saw all the good things about veterinary medicine and some of the challenges about clinical medicine. And so I think as a young kid, I grew an interest in animals and in being able to work on preventing disease in animals and the human-animal bond, so the connection that people have with their animals. I also, though, was very interested in specifically in infectious diseases and the opportunities for transmission between animals and people. These are called zoonotic diseases, so these diseases that are naturally transmitted between animals and people, and specifically very interested in public health. So what can we do to prevent these transmission opportunities, to prevent disease moving between animals and people? And sometimes it's not directly. So sometimes I know that you've had guests that have talked about things like Lyme disease. So that when I was in New Hampshire, that was a big ticket item that I was working on, is how can we better understand Lyme disease transmission? So how are ticks transmitting it to people, potentially to dogs and other animals? And then how do we ideally get a better feel for what exactly is happening? And most importantly, how can we try and reduce or prevent disease? So as an epidemiologist, that's what I do. I try and work in thinking about populations or groups of animals or people. And so I've had a variety of circumstances and opportunities. So I've worked in public health in New Hampshire. I've worked in public health in California. And most recently, I've started to work specifically on infectious diseases in dogs. And so part of that process resulted in myself and a number of my colleagues coming together and thinking about infectious disease in dogs in what we call group settings. So these are some of the settings that you mentioned in the beginning. So these can be boarding facilities, these can be veterinary hospitals, these can be a dog park. So any place that numerous animals or multiple animals come together for some type of interaction. Sometimes they have direct interaction, like at a dog park. Sometimes, hopefully, they're not having direct interaction, such as at a veterinary facility, but then they're leaving. And potentially, if you have opportunities for diseases to be transmitted back and forth, not only are they going to be potentially transmitting those diseases, but then they're going to leave from that facility and potentially move diseases all over the place. So you talked about Los Angeles and people going away and potentially dogs going into boarding facilities. Sometimes people bring their dogs with them too when they travel. And so potentially there are opportunities for dogs to transmit diseases in small areas, but even across countries and even into new countries. So that's some of the things that I do.
Well, I love the fact that you mentioned group settings, because a lot of people have dogs who are breeds who are basically the life of the party. And when I think about the life of the party, a breed comes to mind, the Labrador Retriever. You cannot not like a Labrador Retriever. Always handsome, always hungry, always happy. I mean, it's one of my favorite breeds, but these breeds tend to be the life of the party. They're social. They like to hang out in group settings, and that is one of the risk factors for spreading potential infectious canine cough. One thing that really is that I'm passionate about talking about, and something I just have to get off my chest, is the notion that the term Bordetella, which a lot of people know and are familiar with, Bordetella, is synonymous with kennel cough. I always try to emphasize that there's more to the umbrella term kennel cough than just Bordetella. Could you speak to that? And what are you seeing in terms of infectious canine cough? And maybe Bordetella may be the primary driver, but there's other conditions, right?
Oh, you've got that right. It's complicated. And that's one of the challenges. We use a term, you know, kennel cough, or we use the term you may have heard, canine infectious respiratory disease complex, or CIRDC.
Right.
And then CIRDC does a nice job because it kind of communicates a little bit more. So it's, we're seeing this complex, a number of things that come together. Sometimes we don't really know what they are because maybe not, it doesn't matter so much. But what we've got is we've got a combination of viruses and we've got a combination of bacteria that are the usual suspects. So I'm just going to list out a couple for people.
Everybody, please pay attention to this because, again, a lot of you listening right there are so good. You guys understand the term Bordetella, but there's more to it than that. So please, Dr. Stoll, go ahead. Let us know what you're seeing.
Great. So when we talk about viruses, you'll hear people talk about viruses like canine adenovirus 2. They'll talk about viruses like canine distemper virus, a very scary virus.
Right.
We'll talk about coronavirus, canine influenza or flu, which I suspect many people have heard about, canine herpes virus, canine parainfluenza virus. And there's a couple of important points there. Some of those, we have vaccines that do a pretty good job of preventing. Some of them, at least we can reduce the severity with vaccines. Some of them, most puppies, hopefully, are getting these vaccines, and hopefully most dogs are being vaccinated as a general term, but they're called core vaccines. Some of them, however, are optional. So you may go to your veterinarian, and unless you're having a conversation about what your dog's lifestyle is or what, you know, your lifestyle is, where that dog spends time, then your veterinarian may recommend or be more likely to recommend some of those vaccines. Now, let's talk about the bacteria. There's a couple of different bacteria, too. So you certainly mentioned one that a lot of people talk about, which is Bordetella bronchoseptica. Now, Bordetella actually, so it can not only transmit in between dogs, so dogs can transmit that bacteria back and forth, cats can get it, and dogs and cats can spread it back and forth to each other. So that's one of them that kind of crosses species. It also, not very commonly, but can cause disease in people. So usually these are people that whose immune system is not functioning properly, so
this
they're called immunocompromised.
Honestly, I hate to interrupt you, but this is literally, for a lot of people, breaking news. This is the first time they've ever heard this. If you are, you know, and again, we're not talking about some sort of fantastical scenario here. There are a lot of people out there for a variety of reasons who just don't have the greatest immune systems. If you have a wonderful immune system, great. You're blessed. We're privileged. And I love that. But there are a lot of people out there who don't have it. You were mentioning Bordetella can affect them as well.
It can. So for the average person, as you mentioned, nothing to worry about. However, if your immune system is severely immunocompromised, so typically these can be people with HIV/AIDS. These can be people who have potentially recently received a transplant, and their physician is telling them that they are immunocompromised. Then you do need to be a little bit concerned if your dog develops a cough. Exactly. And so you want to be a little bit more cautious. Also, these are also people that if you happen to work in an environment, an animal environment, like let's just say at a shelter, or you have a boarding facility and there is an outbreak of kennel cough or of this canine infectious respiratory disease complex, this might be a time to just be a little bit more careful. Maybe you're not going to have direct contact with the animals. You're going to at least be having some conversations with your physician, with the veterinarians that are in charge, just so that people are aware. So Bordetella, important bacteria. This is that we do have a vaccine that can be used for this in certain circumstances. And so again, this would be one that depending on the lifestyle of that dog, it would be important that you communicate that to your veterinarian and you make a choice. There are also a couple other bacteria that we don't think about or talk about too much. One is called Streptococcus equi and one is a Mycoplasma.
So Thank you so much for mentioning that because I would see this on my clinical practice all the time. And this comes to my point. And for everybody listening out there, I want to give kudos to everybody out there who went the extra step to get a diagnosis. When you're hearing the term kennel cough, my question is, what caused the kennel cough? And there are a lot of people who went the extra step where they had their dog, you know, just a quick swab for the back of the throat. Like if, you know, you or I had strep throat, got a swab, we sent it off to lab, and we actually got a true diagnosis. We found out what was there. And some of that, what we found, was exactly what you're about to talk to about right now. What were those two bacteria you mentioned?
Streptococcus equi, Mycoplasma, and of course, Bordetella.
Perfect, perfect. And these together could cause all of the same signs we're seeing in kennel cough, correct?
Absolutely. So sometimes you got one player, sometimes you have multiple players, in other words, multiple bacteria and viruses. Another thing that's really important is, remember, we're talking about, so a lot of times people think, my dog's coughing, I need an antibiotic, I need an antimicrobial. Well, sometimes you do, but again, antibiotics are not going to be very useful at all against viruses.
Pause so we for have to a remember. Second. If there was a way to verbally highlight, underline, bold, New Times Roman, font 12, this is so important because a lot of people are going into their vet. They're saying, hey, my dog was coughing. I saw my vet. And you know what? He didn't even give me any antibiotics. I'm going down the street to a different vet. Should pet parents out there whose dog's coughing, should they be alarmed if they go see their veterinarian and they do not prescribe antibiotics?
Not at all. And the times where usually antibiotics are going to be warranted, it's going to obviously depend on that patient and that veterinarian, the veterinarian examining the animal and feeling that there's something else that's more severe than the average case that's going on here. There may be a secondary bacterial infection. There might be evidence of pneumonia, so a deep infection in the lungs. But most of the time, these cases, these types of situations that we're seeing with canine infectious respiratory disease complex are fairly mild, and generally they are self-limiting. In other words, they will go away on their own. That doesn't mean we shouldn't do anything. Just like you said before, we should definitely, because we're obviously concentrating, we're talking about infectious diseases. There's lots of other reasons that dogs can cough. Some of them have absolutely nothing to do with infection. And so it's very important that if your animal is coughing, is doing something abnormal, number one, you're communicating with your veterinarian. And number two, you're watching your animal. So making sure that it's eating, drinking normally, it's acting normally, it's doing all those things. If it's doing all those things and it's otherwise a normal dog, but it has kind of a mild cough, then in those situations, and generally, veterinarians will not be prescribing antimicrobials.
Okay, well, perfect. Before we go to break, you know, we could talk about this forever, just this topic alone. But before we go to break, because when we come back from break, we're going to talk a little bit about the risk factors. But what I want to talk about right now is vaccination prevention, because there's not just pet lovers listening. There's not just pet parents listening. There are people, there are business owners who are listening, who are saying, I have a daycare. I have a boarding facility. I have a grooming facility. I want a way to talk to my clientele and tell them that they need to have regular vaccines, not just to protect their pet, but to protect all the pets at the facility. And it's actually a little more important than just when you show up last minute, quickly getting the vaccine and then coming over and boarding. Could you talk a little bit about just the idea of that group health, that lack of a better term, that herd health, herd immunity, in terms of protecting everybody, and why vaccinating against all some strains of or some causes of canine cough is so important?
Oh, Dr. Courtney, I couldn't agree with you more. Thanks for bringing that up. So there's a couple of points. So the idea here is that obviously no vaccine is perfect. All right. So vaccination is certainly an important part of it. We're going to talk about that now. But it's also important to recognize that you cannot rely alone on vaccine. You are going to get nailed.
Right.
So number one, when we think about vaccinations, you brought up a really important point. So one, which vaccines are we recommending in our particular facility? So this is maybe a boarding facility, maybe it's a veterinary clinic, maybe it's both. And so our group has kind of come together and put together some recommendations about what some of those vaccines might be. But probably equally important is the other point you made, which is it takes time to build immunity. You cannot expect that you're going to vaccinate your dog today and it's going to be protected tomorrow. So it's important to be proactive.
So well said.
We've all seen it, right?
Right,
so,
of course.
So we need to make sure that those risks are communicated to the animal owners, communicated and respected by the people that are working in that facility. So if we're going to vaccinate, many times it can take several days at least to build up immunity depending on the type of vaccine. So we're going to want to make sure that the vaccines that we're recommending not only are specific for trying to prevent disease. So the concept there is that if you can reduce the opportunities for dogs to transmit this to other dogs. Now, let me just take 1 second to say how that can happen. So we talked about different types of bacteria, different types of viruses. They can be a dog sneezing or coughing. So those droplets go into the air. They might go a short distance. They fall onto the ground. They fall onto your hands. They fall onto another dog. They can have direct contact. So two dogs can have contact with each other. And we can
life
have
the
these
party.
Things that are like life of the party.
Yes.
Or we can have these things, which we consider what we call sometimes fomites. So these are things that are these shared items that happen. And so this could be, for instance, at a facility where there's toys. So that toy gets contaminated with, let's just say, flu. So influenza is actually a pretty wimpy virus. It only hangs out for maybe a day or two at the most, all right? Still, a day or two. So that means if it's not, that item is not getting cleaned and disinfected, that item now serves as an opportunity to transmit that flu virus to other dogs. Now, that was just flu, and that's a pretty wimpy one. We got other ones that can last for weeks or even months in the environment. So thinking about making sure, you know, all of these different steps come in, and we'll obviously spend some time talking about the specific prevention methods.
Yeah, that's so, oh, wow, that's so incredible. You just hit, there's so much to unpack there, and you just hit us with so many great terms just in terms about, okay, well, you say, doc, how did my dog get this cough? And you broke it down so perfectly. The droplets that are in the air, which I think a lot of people, human beings, experience when somebody's sneezing on a plane, you're like, oh, no, we direct contact. Dogs, let's talk about the doggy handshake, right? I mean, that's how it's spread in humans and dogs when they have direct contact. And then you said the word fomites. And everybody who's near the Google, go ahead and Google the word fomites, because these are inanimate objects where these bacteria and viruses can just sit there and reside. And some of them are hardy and they hang out in the environment a long time, and some of them will be destroyed or die pretty quickly. But guess what? It doesn't need much time. Dr. Stoll, will you hang out with us just for a little bit longer? We have to talk a little bit about risk factors, because I know that there's people listening right now who are business owners and who are want to know, how do I disinfect my environment? How do I keep my dog free from this? And they're craving for this. So would you mind staying with us?
My pleasure.
Excellent. When we come back on the flip side, we talk about some risk factors.
And we'll be back right after these messages.
We'll be right back right after these messages. Stay tuned.
I'm Elaine Schultz, president for 25 years of Greyhound Pet Adoption, Springfield, Missouri. We are a nonprofit 501c3 organization that adopts out retired racing greyhounds. There are currently 19 racetracks in the U.S., 14 are in Alabama and Florida. We also provide monetary assistance to track adoption programs in those states to transport hundreds of greyhounds to adoption groups throughout the U.S. There is a great need for transportation funding. You can help by donating at gpamo.org and note transportation with your donation.
Oh, sure. It's all fun and games until someone ends up in a cone. That's right. We are animals. Deal with it. Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Wow. Today we're back. We're dedicated this entire podcast to talk about just the cough. And you're like, just a cough? But we're talking about not just a cough, but infectious kinds of cough. Because, you know, all these tuned in pet parents listening, there are so many things that actually cause a cough. But today we're just focusing on infectious disease, a mix of viruses and bacteria. And we're joined today by an awesome, gifted individual, Dr. Stoll. He's an epidemiologist, and he's really just broken things down to us in the very simple terms on what causes canine cough, all of the different entities that can cause it, particularly a mix of viruses and bacteria. We talked about how it can be transmitted. We've even touched on vaccines, which in itself could be you know, let's be honest, a totally separate discussion. Dr. Stoll, thanks again for joining us. I wanted to delve a little bit into risk factors, because when I'm thinking about risk factors and being part of practices that have a boarding component to them, where you have boarding facilities either in the back of the practice or on the side, I think about the risk factors in terms of a moist environment. I think about lack of airflow sometimes, or what I call like mixed population, where you don't have an all-in, all-out strategy. When you think about risk factors for spreading infectious disease, what kind of things come to your mind?
Well, a lot of the ones that you mentioned are absolutely right on. And so certainly things like ventilation can be really, really important. But what comes with that, and I think if we all think about, you know, those of us that have been around, just the same kind of factors when we think about the human disease transmission. So, you know, kind of what's the worst scenario? And so some of it has to do with things like stress. That's a hard one to control,
right.
But certainly animals that are stressed are more likely to be shedding, to be transmitting diseases. Overcrowding, or just how tightly packed these animals are together. So are the runs pretty open up? Are there a lot of space between animals? Or are animals pretty close together? And probably one of those greatest risks could be the opportunities for dogs to have contact with each other. So sometimes we know that and we expect it, right? You don't bring your dog to doggy daycare and expect that it's going to be completely solid, you know, isolated from every other animal. They're there to play, and that's fine. But the problem comes in when we take some of these risks and we don't necessarily acknowledge them, or we don't think about them. So in that doggy daycare scenario, there are some increased risks by allowing dogs to have contact, but there's a lot of things that we can do to mitigate or reduce those risks. So some of the other pieces that we've talked about kind of casually over this podcast, we've talked about vaccination, super, super important. So when there's a sick dog in a facility, it's really important that we are very proactive about thinking about that animal. So we have a tendency, unfortunately, of thinking about, it's just a cough, it's probably not a very big deal. But unfortunately, very, very quickly, that virus, that bacteria can move through this animal, this population of animals, extremely quickly. And so having what we call protocols in place, so specific items that a facility is going to do, whether that is, you know, a boarding facility or veterinary facility, that if they identify an animal that likely has an infectious cough, that we're taking that dog and we're putting it in a separate area to make sure we can reduce the chances that it's going to be spreading it. Yeah. Another thing that kind of came up, and again, it's not super exciting to talk about a lot of times, but it's cleaning and disinfection. One of the kind of key cornerstones of trying to prevent diseases from spreading in dog group settings. And so having a specific protocol for how do we clean, what types of disinfectants do we use for our facility that are going to be most effective in killing the bacteria and viruses that we're worried about, really, really important.
Now, just as a quick word, I know that there's some really dutiful pet parents out there who have actually undergone, for their own pets, self-quarantine. Now, would you advocate that if you are out there, if you're listening to this podcast and your dog is coughing and you suspect that it's an infectious cause, some of you have voluntarily said, nope, you're not going to daycare, or nope, you're not playing with your playmate in the neighborhood today or for the next couple of days. Would you advocate for pet parents, if they are suspecting an infectious cough, to go ahead and quarantine their own pets? If you do advocate that, how long should they do it?
Such a good question. Yes, absolutely advocate that. In fact, that if only we were all that good. If
right.
we were, we would probably be able to reduce these diseases significantly. So there's a couple of times when you want to be thinking about, we can use the term kind of quarantine or keeping your dog away from other dogs for a period of time. Number one is if your dog's sick, right? If your dog's sick, and especially if it's something that is believed to be likely infectious, like for instance, a dog with a new cough, then yes, you should definitely, if usually your dog is going to a daycare or any type of facility, number one, you should contact that facility so that they know that the dog's sick. Because, for instance, as an epidemiologist, something that's really important to me is understanding what's going out there with animals that are in the group that I take control of or that I'm in charge of. So if I don't know that all these dogs are sick, how can I possibly begin to understand what might have happened so that in the future I can reduce those chances? So number one, it's just like if your kid's sick. Hopefully you're calling the school and you're reporting that they're ill. Number two, keep that dog away from other dogs. So the duration or how long you normally do this, it varies a little bit. But in general, we say probably around 10 days to 2 weeks is long enough for whatever that dog's got. And as, again,
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. You know, I got to stop you. Anytime you drop knowledge on us like that, I can't let you go.
For everybody
listening out there, how long, one more time, should they be? And again, this varies because, again, we know that there's a mix of viruses and bacteria, and they all have different behaviors. They all hang around the system different times. But if we can just get some general parameters, like you said, could you repeat that for us? How long should they be self-quarantining?
You should keep that animal, that dog, away from other dogs for 10 days to 2 weeks. So I'll tell you, working in the veterinary facility, for instance, I hear that this dog has been recently diagnosed with kennel cough, quote unquote. I say, that's great. Your dog's doing okay. Fantastic. I don't want your dog to come in for, you know, they were going to, for instance, come in for an elective surgical procedure. Let's keep them home until they're healthy, at least await that 2 weeks. That way, even though the dog still is maybe feeling good after a couple of days, maybe they're not even coughing after a week, they still are potentially shedding or transmitting those viruses and those bacteria for up to 2 weeks. So that means that those dogs, if you're not careful, you bring those healthy, what appear to be healthy dogs back in, and you're going to start an outbreak. Not a good idea.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because it gets really, you brought it full circle. You know, I had mentioned earlier that a lot of Los Angelinos, they get into contentious discussions, and I get it, with a lot of boarding grooming facilities because they say, hey, my dog got kennel cough at your facility. And what's so important about what you said is that there are dogs who are shedding virus, shedding bacteria. They apparently seem healthy, and there's an incubation stage. When you hear about this, these pet parents who say, hey, listen, my dog may have gotten sick at a particular facility. Could you just one last second, just talk a little bit about what it means to be shedding a virus in which you look healthy, but you actually have the virus?
That's right. So for many of these, and it varies a little bit on how long you might do that. So once an animal becomes infected with whatever, bacteria, viruses, obviously there's a period of time that it takes between when they get infected and when they start to show what we call clinical signs. So in this case, the coughing, sneezing, whatever it might be. Then they remain infectious, or in other words, they still have those virus and their bacteria that are in their system, they're replicating for some period of time. In general, for most of these types of the common causes of this complex, it's generally about 2 weeks to 10 days to continue for those bacteria and those viruses to come out of their cough, to come out of their nose, where they can potentially still transmit it.
Okay. And I want to keep you so long because everything you're saying, I'm hanging on every word, but I can't let you go without talking about something that's been in the news a lot lately. This is on the tip of everybody's tongue and the forefront of everybody's mind, and that is canine influenza. If you think that the canine flu, it hasn't made it to your neighborhood yet, so it's not something you need to think about. I need, you know, everybody who's listening, if that's your mentality, I really want you to talk to some of these business owners in Pennsylvania, some of these business owners in Chicago who have had this condition affect their businesses in a major way. I know of a particular boarding facility in Pennsylvania that had an outbreak of canine flu 3 times. So they had to shut down their boarding facility for at least 2 weeks. And if you do that 3 times, on the 3rd time you come back, sometimes you don't have a business. So Dr. Stoll, would you mind just talking a little bit about canine flu, canine influenza? We know that there's H3N2, H3N8, that a couple of different strains, and just how this can spread like wildfire.
That's a perfect example of seeing something that can move through a community extremely quickly. And what you really did a nice job stating is that one of the ways that we think, so the H3N2 that came in, we think that one of the kind of key players that allowed it to transmit so well and to move so quickly in large areas, so Chicago had a huge outbreak, lots of areas in the country had a huge outbreak, were some of these kind of group settings where dogs are coming together. One of the challenges with flu is that sometimes these dogs, before they even become sick, they can shed the virus for a short period of time. So in other words, the dog comes in, it looks normal, it starts shedding the virus, and then about, you know, a couple of days later, it becomes sick. And so potentially, it's really hard to get on top of it. And so in those circumstances, obviously understanding and using something like a vaccine can be very effective, but also making sure that you have a way of people communicating that, yes, my dog is at your facility. Yes, it is now sick. I'm not sure what it is right now, but or maybe it's been diagnosed with flu, but having that feedback mechanism or that way to communicate with people. So what flu did is flu moved into the area, and it moved across the country in these big kind of bursts, and it created havoc, really, right? So we were seeing people that were extremely scared at dog shows. So again, a group event where we have a lot of contact. Sometimes we have dog-to-dog contact, but one of the things that I haven't talked about yet is probably the 10 worst enemies for infections are the fingers on your hands. So
There you go.
When we touch an animal that's sick, we get those viruses and bacteria on our fingers. We then touch the next animal, and we've now moved those viruses and those bacteria. So we talk about something in human healthcare, and the same thing's true in veterinary healthcare, which is we call it hand hygiene. So that means washing your hands as appropriately with soap and water or using an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. So those of you that work in a facility where you have animals, definitely this is a key way or prevention method that we can reduce the chances of diseases moving between dogs. So you touch a dog, and then you're going to be working on a different dog, you should be performing hand hygiene. So that's probably one of the most critical things and ways that we could potentially reduce something like flu or any of these culprits for respiratory disease in dogs. Number two, we have already talked about the sick dog thing, right? So absolutely, your dog's sick, it should not be going to these events. Even similarly, if you have a dog that you think has been exposed, so in other words, my dog was at the facility, was at the boarding facility at the same time that there was a very large, or there was an outbreak of flu, ideally what you're doing is you are taking your dog. So your dog right now may have the virus. In this case, it could be depending on what the particular, what we're talking about. It's got it in its system. So we want to make sure that that dog really doesn't have a chance to spread it to someone else. So ideally, we'd be watching that dog, usually a week's plenty of time. So because these dogs, as you said before, an incubation period, how long it takes between when the dog's exposed and when it becomes sick, usually that's a couple days. Just watch it for a couple of days before you do something extreme, like you take it to another facility, you take it to a dog park. Just watch it, make sure that it's going to stay healthy. And then finally, the big thing is to think about the cleaning and disinfection. So again, flu, it's a pretty wimpy virus, pretty easy to kill. So we need to make sure, though, that we have good cleaning and good disinfection that are occurring in our facility to make sure that we can reduce those risks.
It's just amazing stuff, because you really put the framework about this condition in abject clarity, because there can be a lot of, and I don't think it's inappropriate attention, but there's a lot of attention on vaccination and vaccination protocols and vaccination schedules. And I get it, because I'm interested in that too. But what we don't want to do is ever understate or undervalue the importance of hand sanitizing, watching, being vigilant, surveillance, and then, of course, cleaning and disinfection. So thank you for just breaking that down for us. And honestly, just thank you in general for just all your knowledge today. It's been, like I said, a fascinating discussion. I could keep you for another 3 hours, but I know you don't have that. You've got some diseases to fight out there. So listen, I'm going to let you go, but I just want to thank you so much for all the knowledge that you've imparted with us today.
Truly my pleasure, anytime.
Excellent. Thanks again. Listen, everybody listening, I mean, this is a real powerhouse in infectious disease. Dr. Jason Stahl, he's an incredible epidemiologist, and he really broke it down for us. One thing I want to emphasize to everybody is that there is more to canine cough than just Bordetella, right? There's a mix of viruses and a mix of bacteria, and they all have different behaviors. But one thing that we talked about more than anything is just keeping the risk factors low, keeping them isolated, going ahead and cleaning and disinfecting, making sure we do hand sanitizing, and watching during that incubation period. We even learned some awesome new vocabulary for some people. For some people, you're familiar with what the term incubation period, what the term fomite means, and of course, shedding. But we covered a lot of ground today, and I just want to thank everybody for joining the podcast. We've got some more amazing powerhouse guests joining the podcast in future episodes. So thanks again for tuning in. Please reach out to me if you have any questions at Dr. Courtney DVM on Twitter or Instagram. And keep in mind, there's nothing stronger than the human-animal bond. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk again next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.